If the story we just heard with the children is about coming to America, my reflection will be more or less about coming out of America into the broader world. Citizens of the world. Citizens of the world. An honorable, albeit antiquated sounding term for those of us who extend our boundaries of care beyond family, friends, church, or nation. Yet, in recent years, the idea of a world citizenry has fallen into disrepute, given the globalized economy that rides roughshod over local culture. But can we accommodate the idea in some way to serve us UUs as a moral compass to guide us to fulfilling our principles? The original term for citizen of the world is the word cosmopolitan, a word that evokes the image of a world-trekking colonialist who loves to sample exotica from other cultures. But ironically, some of the most vocal proponents of the cosmopolitan ideal have been from Africa, from the African diaspora. Kwame Appiah, a biracial Ghanaian and English philosopher at Princeton, forcefully argues that cosmopolitanism is not elitist, that it is a moral virtue ripe for cultivation, and that one of the most cosmopolitan spots on Earth is the market at Kumasi in central Ghana. Here, Kwame recollects that as a child, he met and conversed with merchants from all over the world, from Syria and Lebanon, India and China. For Kwame, it is not a problem that Ghanaian youths sport cell phones or drink Coca-Cola. It is a rich blessing that cultures migrate, interconnect, and hybridize. Last summer, I had a mini Kumasi experience right near my home down in Mountain View. My daughter, Erica, whom you met, many of, you, of whom you met her a few weeks ago, daughter Erica and I had some time to kill before a yoga class, and we stopped at a random cafe on El Camino Real. It's called the Sufi Coffee Shop, and we struck up a conversation with the owner, Parviz Rasti, a former comp lit professor from Iran. In the coffee shop, he sat down with us and proposed that God is love and everywhere present and unattached to a particular creed. We even bought a slim chapbook of translated Sufi poetry by him. He had no wish to convert, just a desire to converse. That was the mission of his cafe. I immediately thought, wow, maybe we youth should set up a series of cafes in our communities. I told this idea to Amy Zucker Morgenstern, a senior pastor at the church, UU Church in Palo Alto, and she ever so gently mentioned that the UU Church in Berkeley is already creating a beloved cafe where anyone can hang out and respectfully exchange ideas and experiences. So truly, for our cosmopolitan values, there is nothing new under the sun, but so much beauty and mutual respect that lies secreted away in little corners of the globe, from Mountain View to Hayward to the markets of West Africa. Let us draw the circles in.
I think I might give a different reflection after the first part of this service. The universe has a deep sense of irony. My opening line, my favorite theological word is messy. In conversation, when I hear people make casual references to their own theologies, so often their theologies uphold this principle of order. Perhaps you've heard, you know, someone say everything happens for a reason. If something doesn't make sense in your life, it just means that you can't understand some grand cosmic plan. And so here there is this assumption that there is order to life, that there is tidiness to life, and we just cannot understand it. But what is wrong with messy? In President Obama's election night speech 2 weeks ago, I grinned when he said the following, that democracy in a nation of 300 million can be noisy and messy and complicated. And I thought, democracy of 3 million, try democracy of 6 children in worship. These arguments that we have, that messiness, they're a mark of our liberty. And we can never forget that as we speak, people in distant nations are risking their lives right now just for the chance to argue about issues that matter. So the mark of health of our national community can be measured by messiness, noisiness, and complexity. And by that measure, we are a really healthy community. Despite our frustrations and exasperations with such messiness, it is good for us. Trying to be one community with so many differences means lots of messiness, and the more we can tolerate and embrace, the healthier and wiser I think we become. Messiness is not violence, not violence like that being experienced right now in Israel and Gaza. In fact, I wonder if we had more messiness, if we could tolerate more messiness, perhaps that would be a way to prevent such violence. Our lives are complicated, and the borders of our living are not always so clear. I suppose that for a person like me, who so appreciates and extols the virtues of messiness, that directing a family ministry program is quite appropriate. Our children teach us many wise lessons. Dare I say that our children may be our greatest experts at messiness. And I wrote this before this morning. I just want to tell you. Last Sunday, 8 of our families were blessed by the generosity of Daryl and Renee Ray, who shared with us their Sunny Slope farm. It was a delightfully crisp, sunny morning that welcomed us as we gathered into a circle to do a regular opening ritual. It was my first time leading a ritual with a goat participating. Renee and Daryl had prepared us for messiness. Wear comfortable shoes and clothes that you do not mind getting dirty, they told us. And so we embarked on an adventure of messiness, digging in, tasting, smelling, picking, prodding through their farm. Standing in the middle of a fallow garden plot, Renee shared with us how horse manure was the best kind of fertilizer for our food to grow in. And I could not resist this. "Hey, Shay," I said. "Yeah," he replied. "Do you know that they spread horse poop right here to help the plants grow?"
Yeah.
To quote him, "Ew." And then he trotted off to look at a squash that, was it a mole or a woodchuck had taken a big bite of? Yep, messy and yucky. And ain't that the truth of life? The messiest, yuckiest parts can be the most fertile and nurturing. The messy things we go through are exactly the things that can help us grow and learn in ways that we might not have ever imagined or wanted. One of the most delicious parts of our time on the farm was in the tomato vines. We got to pick and taste a number of different varieties. And my favorite were these grape-sized small ones. After making our way through the tomato vines, and temporarily losing a few adults and children in the middle of them, I looked down and I saw our little Olivia Kiesling with her blonde mop of curls, and she had this neon pink coat on, and her arm was stretched out, kind of resting at her side. And grasped in her hand was a half-eaten tomato oozing down her arm. She looked up at me, revealing speckles of tomato juice and seeds sticking to the front of that neon pink coat. She took another bite and looked up at me and smiled, and then she waddled off to smell a flower. Olivia does not need to learn one thing about messiness. She has got it down pat. Dare I say that I think most of our children do too. Daryl and Renee, thank you for providing to our families the tastes and smells, textures and sounds of messiness. There are few better ways for our families to learn and experience our particular brand of Unitarian Universalism than to be welcomed into your home and farm. In this season of gratitude, it will be messy. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but let us give thanks for that messiness. Because it is good, because we are alive in a messy, interdependent web of existence. Blessed be, and amen. Amen.